The 1973 Cambridge May Week review was called Every Packet Carries a Government Health Warning, which Douglas neither appeared in nor wrote for. But when John Lloyd became a BBC radio producer the following year, he decided to use the show as a basis for a radio series, which he was to call Oh No It Isn't. This time, however, it was his choice to include material by the Adams Smith Adams writing team. Ironically, in exactly the same week that this series began its six-week run on Radio 4, the TV version of the 1974 May Week review was shown on BBC Two. This was the show, you will remember, that had over 30% of it written by Adams Smith Adams. So all in all, it was a very good week for Douglas the writer. From episode 2 of Oh No It Isn't, here is a sketch called Signalman Pritchard, performed by Mary Allen, Jonathan Cantor, and Griff Rhys-Jones.
Signalman Pritchard of the Western Region is here to see you, sir.
Righto, send him in, Miss Rusty. Oh, Pritchard. I understand the 8:45 to Basingstoke was late again, Pritchard.
Yes, it may well have been, sir.
Yes, but this time it was very late. Very, very, very late. 3 days late, Pritchard.
Yes, well, we were having a tea break in the signal box, sir, and that kettle does take an unconscionable long time to boil.
What did you say, Pritchard?
I said an unconscionable long time, sir.
And what should you have said?
A bloody long time.
That's better.
I've been meaning to see you about that, sir. I want to put in for a vocabulary rise.
A vocabulary rise?
Yes, sir. I want to use words like existentialism on duty, sir.
Existentialism? In a signal box? It hardly seems relevant, Pritchard.
Existentialism informs all areas of life, sir.
Yes. But does it explain why the 8:45 to Basingstoke was 3 days late? The vast majority of the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra arrived at the Winter Gardens, Basingstoke, some 60 hours after a small number of their colleagues had delivered a spirited rendering of Beethoven's Fifth Piano Quintet. An economical performance, said the Basingstoke and District Advertiser. Unfortunately marred by long periods of total silence. Colonel Jack Witherington Stokes was coming home to Basingstoke to die. He didn't make it, Pritchard.
British Rail makes the going easy, sir.
Thank you, Pritchard. Which brings us to another point. Passengers are requested not to use the toilets while the train is standing at a platform. The 8:45 to Basingstoke was in the station for 71 hours and 28 minutes.
Oh, can't we let it pass, sir?
That, unfortunately, is what a lot of people thought. Now, perhaps you would care to explain.
Well, it was existentialism that did it, sir.
Look, Pritchard, how many times have I got to tell you?
No, it was on account of not being able to use the actual word that it all happened. You see, I was trying to explain it to my mate Bob, and I had to do it by some sort of a charade.
A charade, Pritchard?
Yes. Well, to give him the basic idea of existentialism, I left all the points open over the entire Western region.
So it was you! Do you realise that your existential point system has caused hundreds of trains not only to be derailed, but to go leaping over each other like copulating caterpillars? The worst case is that of the Exeter St David's Express, which was involved in a multiple pile-up. On the M1, Pritchard.
Yes, yes.
Look, Pritchard, you were transferred to us from BEA because your structuralist radar system had caused 10 jumbo jets to land not at Gatwick, but here on Waterloo Station. Well, I thought that would get existentialism out of your system, but it appears not. You've been... Pritchard... Who's your friend in the QE2?
The letter P brings us first of all to publishing. And in part two of his series Hitchhiker's Guide to the Future, Douglas reflected on the potential for both authors and publishers on the internet. How, for example, would electronic publishing, or e-publishing as it's become known, affect the book industry?
One of the objections to e-books, of course, is that people don't like reading off computer screens. That's not surprising. Books are usually printed at 600 or 1200 or even 2400 dots per inch, whereas a computer screen only gives you a resolution of 72 or 96 dots per inch. It's not comfortable to read. But that's just technology. It doesn't work yet, but it will. It's important to remember that the relationship between different media tends to be complementary. When new media arrive, they don't necessarily replace or eradicate previous types. Though we should perhaps observe a half-second silence for the 8-track. There, that's done. What usually happens is that older media have to shuffle about a bit to make space for the new one and its particular advantages. Radio did not kill books, and television did not kill radio or movies. What television did kill was cinema newsreel. TV does it much better because it can deliver it instantly. Who wants last week's news? Let's look at my bookshelf. Now, here's some P.G. Woodhouse and Jane Austen. Well, I want those for life. Prime candidates for good paper and strong bindings. Here's Richard Dawkins's Blind Watchmaker, a seminal book for me and definitely one I want for life. But its index is important and its bibliography, its references to other books and pages. I can see great benefits to having that in electronic form. And next to it is a manual for a laser printer. Complete waste of shelf space. Put it on the web, update it when necessary, but otherwise don't bother me with it. But that throws up an irony, doesn't it? I'm sitting in a hotel room in Spokane, and I have the easiest possible access to a LaserWriter manual on the web or a Bruce Willis movie on Spectrovision, but what I really fancy at the moment is a bit of Pride and Prejudice. E-books will work if they're not only convenient to read, but easy to use and integrated into everything else we're doing. If it's just another separate gadget we have to figure out, then people may lose patience. It's a little bit like radios. You may have a radio on your hi-fi for listening to music, a radio in the car for listening to the news, and a tiny earpiece radio for picking up the cricket score. But they all work the same way. Generally, old media don't die. They just have to grow old gracefully. Guess what? We still have stonemasons. They haven't been the primary purveyors of the written word for a while now, of course, but they still have a role because you wouldn't want a TV screen on your headstone. And the work of the stonemason persists for centuries, while many of the old Technicolor films, for instance, are rotting away or exploding. Maybe it's new media that die. But here's a nice irony. When the BBC discovered it had lost or thrown away priceless old tapes of Peter Cook and early Doctor Who, the reason they were able to recover some of the material was because someone had illicitly made copies. So the very ease with which intellectual property can now be copied, to the fury of many in the copyright-protected industries, may be the very thing that ensures the future existence and accessibility of that material. The more popular a piece is, the more likely it is to get passed on or copied from one generation to another. Sound familiar? In fact, Richard Dawkins once coined the term memes, somewhat analogous to genes, to describe the way that ideas propagate. They spread around a population competing, effectively, for space in people's heads. And something similar may be happening with our written and recorded artifacts. They're competing for space in our data stores. If you look for songs on Napster, having first consulted your lawyer, of course, you will see it very clearly laid out that there are vastly more copies of, say, Hey Jude on people's hard disks than there are of Donald Wears Your Trousers. Neither, of course, has recorded with that medium in mind. The less popular or the less persistently popular stuff is more likely to end up marooned on future equivalents of 8-track tapes or 5-inch floppies. Whether that material which best succeeds at being reproduced is necessarily the best by other criteria is, of course, the subject of another debate. But that's just the way that life works. Literally. Ask Darwin.
4 months earlier, in an interview with Nicholas Rowe of the Guardian newspaper, Douglas said, "I've been talking about how electronic books will come and how important they will be, and all of a sudden Stephen King publishes one. I feel a complete idiot, as it should have been me." Ah, well, that's the way life works. Literally. Ask Darwin.